What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a ton of books that have come out this week. We break them down. We suck them dry like vampires.
Yes, in a marvelous way.
But we're not there yet. First, we're going to kick it off talking about The Boy Wonder, number one from DC Comics by Judy Ba.
A twist.
This is the latest Black Label series. It focuses on Damian Wayne, who is at the beginning of his career here, trying to prove himself to Batman, who is out of town. And in the process, he is seemingly over the course of the series going to individually connect with all of the previous Robins. I loved this book. I was really looking forward to it. I wasn't sure what to expect. But one of the things that I really appreciated about it is, in general, I've enjoyed the Black Label line, but it skews older, right? Like, there's definitely more of a, oh, this is a adults only, we can do whatever we want. There could be cursing. There could be more extreme content.
Bat penises.
Bat penises, if you want. But here, this really leads into Damian Wayne being younger and gives it more of a prestige graphic novel, but all ages flair. And I love that. I thought it was great. Judy Ba's art is absolutely superb throughout. Great book.
I would say the art is super tight bananas. I mean, it's really impressive.
Oh, interesting. Oh,
that's a term I haven't heard in quite some time.
Oh, I just feel like he's underselling the art a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Forgive me for not hearing that for a while, but could you just define that real quick just so I have it in my brain going forward?
Well, there's great art, you know, that's right here.
Yes.
There's amazing art, you know.
Slightly higher.
Slightly higher. And then there's super tight bananas art, which is even higher.
Wow, that went off screen.
Yeah.
That's really high.
It goes from amazing to super tight bananas in one jump, you say?
Yep.
Nothing in between. Not a tight banana or a super banana or just a banana.
Interesting. I don't think so.
Wow, great. I'm glad you didn't design the Richter scale, for instance. This book is very good and a fun surprise in the way that you're saying it, Alex. Like, the art is really unique, stands alone, and it feels like a book that just is what it is in a way that is it isn't pushing something. I feel like a lot of extreme books that are in Black Label, not a lot, but some of them are we're going to push this particular thing. And this just feels like a cool story that stands on its own. It really gets us inside of Damian Wayne's head.
You love that.
From a slightly different perspective. Often we're riding with his choices, and this is sort of observing his choices. And I know that sounds like a subtle distinction, but it really works here.
We've seen, the origin story, different times, but I think as someone who gets tired of origin stories, I was impressed artistically the way this was presented, which made something that we've seen a lot seem fresh.
I have one point I want to say real quick. Sorry, I know I cut you off, Alex. There's a section in here where Nightwing and Batgirl, huge fans of these characters.
You are.
There's an exchange they have when they first arrive where they say, "You remember to buy the baby formula. Yup, and the money for the sitter. Awesome. Thanks, honey." In this story, do they have a kid?
I guess so. Yeah.
Because, that's a crazy tiny reveal.
Well, the thing that I think is going on here is
isn't that the definition of a baby, though? A crazy tiny reveal?
Definitely. That's a real splash page.
That's right before last we had our first kid. My wife was like, "I've got a crazy tiny reveal for you." And I was like, "What is it?" Then my life was never the same. This is called The Boy Wonder, not Damian Wayne or Damian Wayne The Boy Wonder or Damian Wayne Robin or anything. It is about wondering. It's about asking questions. It's about the different iterations of Robin. And the Nightwing that's presented here, because this is very much about Nightwing's origin, almost more so than it is about Damian Wayne's origin, is that he is the grown-up Robin. He's the one that, pun intended, left the nest and formed his own life. And so I think it makes sense that he has a kid in this iteration with Barbara Gordon, something that is not necessarily happening in the main continuity.
So, yet, I say...
Let's move to something that is very much in its own main continuity. Energon Universe 2024 Special Number 1 from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Daniel Warren Johnson, Robert Kirkman, and Joshua Williamson.
What a
art
trio.
By Ryan Ottley, Lorenzo DeFelici, and Jason Howard.
Another trio.
The blood hunt has begun.
Nope, not yet. We're not there.
Okay. So that's
if this
mistake.
Lineup sounds familiar to you from Free Comic Book Day, that's because this is the Free Comic Book Day book now for cash money. Specifically, which I don't think is a bad strategy. Like, they assume not everybody would be able to get their hands on this over the course of Free Comic Book Day. So they're selling it in comic book shops today, Wednesday. This is not a toss-off, we're going to introduce you to the universe book at all. These are main continuity stories from Transformers.
These are like imperative stories. This is the core story here.
I was really looking forward. I was like, oh, they got these teams on stuff. They're like, they'll soft pedal what Transformers are. Nope. This is straight up a story of Megatron and what happened to him and what's going to happen next. And then they're like, oh, it's a Ford rival story. Nope. Here's a really important Transformer that gets introduced. It's like, ah, it's a G.I. Joe story. It's like, nope. One of the biggest twists in G.I. Joe history happens here. Crazy stuff.
Happened before, but it happens in this comic.
Yeah, but good. Great art, great teams. They really up the ante for this one.
Yeah, plus, you know, you got Gobulus taking on Megatron.
Gobulus. That's a name that I've heard before.
When I look at my 2024 vision board, it's dominated by Gobulus.
I'm sorry, it's Globulus.
That's what I said also. I said that too. This is a fun issue in the revelations just keep hitting.
Yeah.
It's wild to me that I guess the head of Cobra is a snake man.
I don't know why that's surprising to you. It makes perfect sense to me.
I thought they were just a terrorist organization. Is that Globulus?
The
head of Cobra, the snake
man. No.
Nope. Globulus is a Transformer then?
No, he's definitely on, you know, he's Cobra La, which is a little different than Cobra, you know.
It's like Shangri-La. Shangri-La.
Cobra La is a little.
And Shangri-La, the other thing that we all know.
Oh, my God.
But this is a little insular at the same time. I know we're joking about it, but I will say, as much as I was like, wow, this is imperative to read for all these books that we're generally enjoying, this is almost too deep cutty, I feel. Like, this is too much, like, you gotta know who Rodimus Prime, was that who showed up?
Yeah, Rodimus Prime,
And I was like, I think I
remember. Well, if you saw the Transformers movie, you know who that is.
I know, but the thing that's really been working about these books is like, know nothing about Transformers? Great. Deep cut fan of Transformers? Also great. Have a good time. These tales are like, for the fans, which
it seems
almost
like
to me feels like what the opposite of what a Free Comic Book Day book should be.
Oh, shots fired. I as a G.I. Joe fan, clutched my pearls and, jumped up and down when the Baroness and spoilers, you know, says, yo, Joe, I couldn't believe it. I mean, I dropped my pitcher of tea. Mm-hmm.
What do you like the Lord Baroness of mercy. Saying,
are you
Joe?
A grandmother? All you hear references are clutching pearls and dropping tea.
I choked on my Werther's and I ate dinner at 4 p.m. As usual, nothing was different. What's more shocking to you, Pete? The Baroness saying "Yo, Joe," or Captain America saying "Hail Hydra"?
I mean, they're both disturbing in different ways.
Is the Baroness like? Is that so shocking because she's like one of the ultimate bad guys?
Yes, yeah, from the beginning.
Are you worried about her becoming a Joe?
It would be awesome if she joined the right team. I can root for her. You know what I mean?
Can you jump just from Cobra to Joe that quickly?
No, you shouldn't be able to.
Yeah, Globulus wouldn't allow that.
Oh, man.
Do you become a snake when you do Cobra?
No.
Do I sound crazy? Because I think I do.
you do sound good.
I think I sound crazy.
I think we need to move on to something.
It's just very rare it's very rare when you read a comic. I have very little working knowledge of. I wasn't allowed to watch G.I. Joe when I was a kid.
Yeah, you
and
bring
so
that up all
to
the time.
Go in so deep and be lost, but the comic goes as deep as Pete's knowledge, and I'm like, How am I wrong twice here? It feels very weird. I also think it's crazy that Void Rivals is like, we're a comic book, but what we do is reveal Transformers exclusively. You like the story here? Sorry. It's like going to a car show. It's like, look at this. Yeah. We got a hot rod.
Yeah. I feel a little bad because a couple of months back, I was like, this Void Rivals book is too much about the Void Rivals. Where are the Transformers? And now, after I said that, every book has been like, here's a bunch of Transformers. Forget about the tidy human characters. Who cares? So my fault.
But it's also like, here's another car. And I'm like, this, what, are you, no one's, they seem surprised a little bit. Like, can you believe this?
Wait. Your problem with car shows is there's too many cars? Is that what you're saying?
I'm just saying,
it's not that. It's a little more like you go to the pizza place and you're like, I'd like a slice of pizza. And they're like, what? You want to see a car? I got a cool car out back. It's named Rodimus Prime. And this one's named Globulus.
I still don't know what Globulus is.
But he's a car. He's a transformer. We established.
Just watch G.I. Joe the movie.
All right. Enough about this book. It's time to talk about another Transformers book.
Has begun.
Not yet.
It feels like it should have begun at this point.
Yeah. Transformers number 8 from Image Comics, written by Daniel Warren Johnson, art by Jorge Corona. In this issue, a lot of talk about Energon.
Emotional.
What's the other thing they want to get?
This is emotional-ish.
Is it gas?
I don't know.
Is it gas? But
they don't
want to
get gas. It feels like they added a second form of energy, and I'm not quite familiar with what's happening here.
It's all energy. Oh, you're talking about spark? That's your soul.
No, not spark. There's something with a T or something like that. I don't know. Tea? Maybe they want to get some tea?
Yeah, they're trying to clean up Pete's dropped tea.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. I like Danny Warren Johnson. Jorge Corona's art is good. This has gotten to the point where I'm like, oh, this is a Transformers book now.
It sure is.
What it says on the cover, Alex, I hate to tell you.
Really emotional and tense for the first couple of issues, and now it's a lot of Optimus Prime and other robots standing around and talking about a lot of robot stuff. And I'm like, can you just drive somewhere? Can you go somewhere?
Wow, look at you. You sound like me when there isn't enough action.
Yes.
Yeah. Or you want Truck Daddy to just truck and not Daddy? I'm sorry, Alex, but he needs a daddy. It's happening.
I do like the parts where Truck Daddy has dreams of being human daddy. That's pretty cool.
Yes.
That's a good twist.
Well, and let me say, Optimus Prime is the most emotional character in comics right now. Yeah. He is literally, like, there's a moment in here where they bring back a Transformer and he's like, hey, I'm just a plane. I can't see. I can't transform. You're going to pilot me, you fucks? And Optimus Prime's like, I'm so sorry. I'll sit with you for a little bit. And I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah, this is an emotional issue. They're dealing with a lot of stuff. I mean, what if you're a Transformer that can't transform? You know what I mean? Does that make you just
a
vehicle? You know what I mean? Like, it's heartbreaking.
He's
yeah, it's...
Get over it.
So they're dealing with some stuff, man. That's what I love about Daniel Warren Johnson. He brings the heart. You know what I mean? It's not going to be all action. There's going to be some emotional stuff. Sometimes you got
to
sit down.
Some plane tried to talk to me and be like, I can't see. What do I do? Or you're just going to pilot me? I'd be like, shut the fuck up and take me to Orlando.
Oh, wow, dude.
Wow. That's
where I'm going.
That's where
all assholes
go. Going to Harry Potter world. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's right, Starscream. Take me to Orlando. Do you ever whisper to your car, Pete? Go ahead, transform. I'm here for you
every day. I also wake up in the morning and test my Jedi, force stuff. But
that must take so much time. All of your tests,
because
you do Transformers, you do Jedi, and you do Ted Lasso, right? Where you test to see if you're Ted Lasso.
How's your? Have you been able to play soccer? Sorry, coach soccer yet?
Not yet. Not yet, but I just got to this town, so they don't know about me. Yeah, the rocket launcher stuff was a bit much, I felt like, but this is still a pretty amazing issue.
Everyone's doing a lot of taking care of Carla here, when she seems to be acting pretty wild.
Is her name Carla because she's also a car?
Oh, no, that's funny.
I thought it was Carly.
That'll be a great reveal later. Yeah, it's
Carla, like Cobra Law, right? That's what we're
Carly,
talking about.
It's Carly. It's Carly.
Carly, Cobra Lee. It's the same thing.
She's sort of Carly. You know
what
I mean?
Is she Globulus?
Now you guys having fun?
I think by the end of the podcast, we'll figure out who this Globulus is. But now it's time to go to our blood block.
Yeah. Welcome to the blood hut. Welcome to the blood hut.
Well, anyway, after last week saying I didn't want to talk.
Sorry, guys. Did the blood hunt begin?
Yes.
The blood hunt has begun.
Yeah, oh, wow. Wait, I missed
Don't make us do the theme music again.
No, that's really good.
We did all of
Welcome
that.
To the blood hunt.
We rehearsed this for weeks.
Yeah.
After last week saying, I really don't want to talk about all of the Blood Hunt books, even though we really enjoyed Blood Hunt number one, Justin, you were like, oh, really? And so that swayed me to go, sure, let's talk about all the Blood Hunt books. So...
And I'll tell you what, it's fun to talk about
it. It's fun.
I agree. I was definitely like, harumph, harumph. No, thank you. This is going to be a lot of the same stuff. But thinking about it for approximately 5 seconds, I also remembered having asked repeatedly for a real crossover for Marvel many times that crossed over into titles, actually had impact on the titles, wasn't just a series of one-shots and miniseries that didn't connect to anything. We're still getting some books that are not Blood Hunt books, like we'll talk about some of them later, but this is a true, honest-to-goodness crossover into the real titles. Highly recommend read them in the order we're about to talk about them.
Death.
Because there's stuff, I cannot believe there's not like numbers on the title, because there's stuff that happens in some of these comics that directly affects the comics that happen afterwards.
And I will say, it's convenient that the reading order is also alphabetical order. Because that's how I consume these comics. That I was like, oh, if I had done this any differently.
Your stack?
Yes.
Wow.
Well, how do you do?
That's wild. I didn't even realize that. Good call.
What do you do?
I go least excited for, and then I go like.
What? You do a reverse stack?
No, I got to give myself a little treat in the middle. So I go kind of like lettuce because it's like, oh, it's dumb.
Oh, so you do like a couple comics and you jam a donut in the middle? And then
Yeah, exactly.
Well, regardless, that worked out nicely for you, Justin, because we're going to talk about Amazing Spider-Man number 49 from Marvel, written by Zeb Wells, art by John Romita Jr. This is actually kicking off its own miniseries, which is Amazing Spider-Man Blood Hunt. It'll switch back to the regular story next issue. But in this one, White Rabbit is turned into a vampire. We get some kind of important rules about how vampires work in the Marvel Universe, that if you are turned into a vampire, if you kill the vampire that turned you into a vampire, you will turn back human, which is
wild.
Great. Rule.
I didn't know that.
I've never heard that before.
That seems kind of important for what's happening.
You've never heard that? That's one of many vampire rules that different canons have taken on or not taken on. But yeah, this leads to a great issue, I think. Like, I really love the Zeb Wells issues that are sort of where we're really with Spider-Man the whole time, and it's about him being like struggling with something. And in this, we get a lot of emotional moves from him that I buy and are a classic Spider-Man problem.
Well, it's also... Oh, go ahead, Bede, please.
I was just going to say, like, I like this kind of, like, Spider-Man starting off being like, yeah, I got working out my regressions, and then kind of things change a little bit. And, he gets kind of tricked into helping. He doesn't like it. And then we kind of have this thing where he doesn't want to stab this vampire. And I think it's because this guy looks a lot like Foggy Nelson myself. But I just believe...
someone that Spider-Man sort of knows? Yeah, like a distant acquaintance?
I'd stab anybody else, but not somebody who looks like Foggy Nelson.
Yeah, same Z's.
Like a mildly successful assistant lawyer? Just like second name lawyer?
What I thought
like
was really
like, you're talking like not Jacoby, but Myers.
You know what I mean? Dude, Myers don't get enough love.
Not Celino, but Barnes.
Yeah.
We're talking about this a little bit, but this moral conflict that Spider-Man goes through, I thought was interesting and varies from issue to issue that we're going to talk about. But the idea here that he's dealing with is, hey, these are people, and if they can get turned back, oh God, what do I do? So I wonder, versus other titles where people are like, nah, it's vampires, we can kill whoever, let's go, stake them all.
I thought about this, and I will say there is a line, there's, in Blood Hunt number one, it was like, oh no, the sun's gone away. oh no, who are all these very bad regular vampires that came in? Those are like literal cannon fodder. That's who most people are killing. And then there's the second wave is all the people that they're turning. Yes. And that's where Spider-Man is like, oh no.
Well, let's just to turn to the next one we're going to talk about, they come up with a handy excuse for why it's cool to kill vampires. Yeah, so you wanted to say something about Spider-Man?
Real quick, just wanted to say that the art was really phenomenal.
Yeah, it's John Romita Jr. Always
Romita,
good.
Yeah.
Avengers number 14 from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by C.F. Villa. While the Avengers have been absolutely obliterated by the Blood Coven in the first issue of Blood Hunt, a new team arises led by Captain America. And I'll tell you what, I think this is my favorite issue of Jed McKay's run on Avengers so far. And maybe the first one that has actually felt like Avengers to me, Cap leading the team, them all having very different, distinct personalities. There's a lot of fun there with Hercules, Hazmat not wanting to be there at all, Quicksilver doing his Quicksilver thing. And spoiler here for the book, but as I was intimating earlier, they're fighting Nazi vampires. So they're like, it's fine. Yeah. Even if they weren't vampires, they're still Nazis. Let's kill them. It's great. I had a blast reading this issue.
Yeah, I mean, I was having a really great time. I also really love the art style. It has kind of an old school feel to it, which is really nice. I thought it was kind of funny. It's like vampires aren't evil enough. Let's turn it up a notch with evil Nazi vampires. But I was a little disappointed with the last page reveal that it's like some evil Nazi.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, it's vampire a perfect reveal. That looks like Wolverine. And I was like, boo.
The last page reveal, spoiler here, is that the Nazi vampire behind them is Baron Blood, who's a Nazi vampire that's fought
Captain America. It's the most over-the-plate reveal.
100%.
So you're not saying it's an evil version of Wolverine?
No.
Oh, okay, good.
No, it's a Nazi vampire.
Anybody can wear a mask that where the flaps go from your nose to a distinct point in the air, creating two triangles.
Yeah, but he's not. It's not a Wolverine mask. He has like bat ears coming out.
Oh, I thought it was like an evil Nazi Wolverine, and I was like, "What are
we
doing?"
It's pretty close. I will say to agree with Pete, it is pretty close to Wolverine. The way
Wolverine is the one who's incorrectly wearing it. Baron Blood, the vampire who is a vampire bat.
Isn't it crazy the idea that Wolverine was like, how should I make my mask? I guess I'll just match my hair. My hair is spiky that way. I'll make the mask the size of my hair.
It's just like in X-Men, you know, when they took off the triangle helmet. The Shi'ar hair is the exact same.
Maybe Wolverine is Shi'ar. Big reveal. What do you guys think about this title, or do we want to continue the hunt?
No, I like this. I agree with you. This is a great issue, and the distinct voices. I love that it is like using Avengers canon, where we get a lot of characters who are from disparate portions of the history. The Avengers Academy reference with Hazmat. Great to see Hercules back out there being Hercules.
Hercules.
That's a character I feel like, that I think we could just see more of. Like, we got a lot of Hercules when he replaced Hulk. For a time in the Fred Van Lente world back in the day. That was really fun. And Greg Pak. So more of that. I love all of these characters being together. And it put the idea of being an Avenger at center as opposed to them just doing something.
Yeah, that's why you liked it, Alex.
Yes, maybe. I liked it because it was an Avengers team acting like an Avengers team versus the Ashen Combine and the Impossible City are here, which does not connect with me on a base human emotional level in the same way. It was much headier for the first bunch of issues.
Would you call us the podcast Combine?
Of course. No, I'd call us the podcast Coven because one of us eats ghosts, and I don't want to say which one. The hunt continues with Blood Hunters number one. From Marvel, written by Mark Russell, Christos Gage, and Erica Schultz, art by Bob Quinn, Javier Garon, and Bernard Chang.
Great trios.
This is one of two issues that released this week. Well, kind of, but this is an anthology-style book telling other tales from Blood Hunt. So we get a tale of Hawkeye, we get one of Dagger, and we get one of Manwolf hanging out with his dad, J. Jonah Jameson. again, I got to say, these were very fun. The highlight for me, for sure, was Mark Russell and Bob Quinn on Hawkeye. Great mustache jokes in here. But every single one of these stories were very funny and gave a completely different flavor to this whole event.
And I think this event feels very classic Marvel. Like, I'm talking like 90s summer annual style event where it's just like, we're putting these stories out there. We're going to touch all aspects of the universe in different ways. They are just aggressive. They're not trying to tell, they're trying to push the boulder up the hill of exposition. It's just a fun story. And we get three great stories here. The dagger one I felt was just, I miss these Cloak and Dagger stories where we get to have they're always like super emotional while also being like just great street level heroes. The Man-Wolf, J. Jonah Jameson, another weird portion of the Marvel Universe, but the Man-Wolf stuff where he's like, I'm also a god on another world. Here's my magic rock that sits in my neck. I was like, whoa, shit, right. Okay. Super weird. And the Hawkeye brought me back to some classic, like, Matt Fraction-style Hawkeye. If you haven't been been missing that, this is a good way to sort of get a little taste of that. And I do have a question for you about how holy water works based on this issue.
Ooh. You being who? Which one of us is a priest on this podcast?
Yeah, which
one? We're about to reveal. It's just crazy. Like, Hawkeye is like, I'll solve this vampire problem. And he throws a priest up there to bless some stuff.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the water kills a bunch of the vampires.
Isn't that what you just do?
That's what you do. You bless the water.
Chemically transform? How does it work?
Yeah, it's like it gets turned into wine, right? I'm Jewish, so I don't know.
Oh, the vampires love wine. They drink too much?
Jewish? Because you're Jewish, you don't know how vampires work? What just happened there?
I'm just saying I don't understand the holy water thing. I believe it gets transformed from water into wine. That's what Jesus did in your myths.
They're called Pete's myths, I believe. All the Bibles I see in hotel drawers say the Bible, a.k.a. Pete's myths.
Yeah.
You think if you were a vampire, you'd be like, excuse me, waiter, can I just double check? Is this water unholy? Want to make sure because it will kill me.
Devil's water.
Can you dip your balls in this to make it unholy? I just wanted to say, it was just action packed. I love all three of the stories. You know, the giant wolf biting dudes' heads off was just awesome. I love the emotion of the stuff. But yeah, really great package here. I'm enjoying this blood hunt.
Well, the hunt goes on, Pete, to Doctor Strange number 15 for Marvel, art by Jed McKay, art by Pasquale Ferry. This is a very important issue. Ooh! If you read Blood Hunt number 1, and spoilers for that here, it ended with the reveal that Blade is seemingly the big bad guy of this event. He's manipulated everything and stabbed Doctor Strange through the midsection. That's where we pick up here with very close to that moment, and then reveal further what's going on, what happens to Doctor Strange. There's some ongoing stuff with the Doctor Strange series as well. So pretty important to read here.
Key book.
A really good issue of this book as well that weaves in some dangerous stuff and has a bit of meta commentary about how events in the Marvel Universe work. I thought this was pretty neat.
Well, and like the best line-wide Marvel crossovers, there are very distinct rules at play. And this book is sort of putting them out there. Like, Infinity Gauntlet was, like, very rule-based. And that made it a strong crossover. In this book, we have, like, they're like, Scarlet Witch has the Darkhold within her. We need that. If we can, there's a spell in there that can banish all vampires. She's gone. She's off the table. So Doctor Strange is like, I'll figure it out. And that's why Blade comes and kills him. Can't capture the Darkhold. So they don't have options, and they have to move from here. So it's very meticulously moving through this. And there's a reveal at the end of the issue that is based exclusively in this Doctor Strange book that I thought was so smart. The art in this book is fantastic. I have some theories about Blade, a theory going forward out of this book that I think changes everything. But just a fantastic issue, standalone and as part of the aforementioned hunt for blood.
Yeah, this is, I mean, you want to talk about super tight bananas art. This is fantastic. And this book moves, man. I mean, Blade is not playing around here. And I think he's being controlled or being made to do stuff. But man, this is just, and I love how upset Clea gets and like threatens Blade. And oh, I just this does such a great job of amping things up and getting you just kind of excited for what's to come.
Yeah, I don't know if this is your theory, Justin, but this book went a far way to convince me this is not Blade or this is somebody else has taken over Blade, specifically because of the line where he says he's been planning this for eons.
Yes.
Yeah. I was like,
but who is that? Like, what in what sort of area of villain are we talking about here? Because there aren't a ton of
Dormammu.
I was thinking Dormammu as well. There aren't a lot of like.
Since we're dealing with the Darkhold.
Would you
Javon?
Say? Oh, wow. That would be a deep pull. I'm curious, like, what, because there aren't a lot of, like, vampire-y, and we have a Dracula issue we're going to talk about almost immediately.
Yeah.
So it's definitely not him. Like, who is the, are we going to get a reveal that another villain is also a vampire, perhaps?
Yeah, like Jubilee.
Could be.
Classic villain.
Yep. Whatever it is, great issue. Let's move on to the Dracula issue. Dracula Blood Hunt number one from Marvel, written by Danny Lohr, art by Vincenzo Caruto. This is a continuation of the story of the daughter of Blade as she fights and then teams up with Dracula because of everything that's going down. If you don't know about her, it's very Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but yeah. With Marvel Universe vampires, but that's pretty much what it is across the board. So fun. Again, another fun book, I thought.
Yeah, Brielle Brooks is her name. There was the, I believe the series or
Bloodline.
Short limited, Bloodline was what the title of the limited series was. But definitely the character, they don't go out of their way to explain too much about her here. So it's definitely, if you like this issue at all or curious about it, I would go back and read that because it literally all the setup is done there. But this is interesting because this feels important too. And this maybe feels like at title feels like maybe the most off to the side of the books we're talking about. But there's something here with Dracula and the daughter of Blade that is very important to the main story, despite the fact that we don't know what that is.
Yeah. And also, there was an interesting thing where Blade's daughter gets bitten by a vampire, but I guess because she's already a vampire, that doesn't mean shit. Because it was like she got bitten. I was like, oh no. And then I was like, oh, I guess that's not
it. Yeah, it's like if you get bit by a human, you don't turn into a human.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we're already human.
That's what I'm saying.
Right. Like, yeah.
It wouldn't change.
Yeah. It wouldn't change.
But if a human bites a zombie, the zombie turns into a human, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Those are the rules. Or if a zombie bites Frankenstein, they turn into a wolfman, which is like a little sign, but it's true. It's true.
Yeah.
Let's.
And how many bites can you take out of a hamburger before you become one?
One, two. The world may never know.
Wow.
Strange Academy, Blood Hunt, number one from Marvel, written by Daniel Jose Older, art by Luigi Zagaria, Eric Gapster, and Scott Hanna. This is the one that I was saying is kind of an anthology, but it's actually all one story spinning off of Strange Academy, which is the magical, essentially X-Mansion, but for magical kids, that's basically what's going on here. They are on a little bit of a field trip to New Orleans when everything goes down. And we, again, get some kind of important information about the status of the Darkhold, who is a boy in the care of
kid. Like,
younged down.
Not Agatha just a regular Harkness. Boy, though, like kind of a creepy boy.
Yeah, creepy little boy. I mean, he was the Darkhold, and he has big D on his shirt. So I like this find. I thought this was, for some reason, Strange Academy has never really grabbed me, so it was hard for me to get into this, but I liked what was going on in this book regardless.
Well, again, this feels sort of important. The Darkhold is what everyone's chasing, and now a book has become a boy that is going to, spoiler for the end of the second story, Madripoor? I was like, well, we're getting into some deep canon stuff here. But I do like the main story and sort of the underlying drama that's happening throughout.
Oh, just to be clear, the second story takes place before the first story. Yes. So you have the second story, they get to Madripoor, and then you go back to the first story.
Why wouldn't they reverse it is my question. Okay. Anyways, yeah, I thought this was another cool hunting book here. We're getting a lot of things going on with Strange and Brother Voodoo, which was great to see the voodoo. And then, kids doing dumb shit, you know, but moves the story forward.
And, yeah, it does. I mean, just to mention what you're saying, this takes up directly after the end of Doctor Strange number 15 and takes that story to the next step. So wild how tightly they're tying all of this, except for Venom number 33 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing, art by Juan Ferreira, where Venom's doing their various Venom things and things are absolutely bonkers. Eddie Brock is the king of all Venoms, and his son is dead but reanimated by a Venom, but no longer has the Venom suit, and the Venom suit is on its own. And also, there's a vampire who I think eats Venoms, and that's the tie-in here.
Can I just do a blood check real quick? How you guys feeling? Because that's a lot of blood hunt books, you know what I mean? I didn't feel like it was too much. Like, I was still having fun all the way through, but I just wanted to check your guys' temp.
And still thirsty.
Still bloodthirsty. All right.
So far, this event is A positive with me.
All right. All right. Glad to hear it. Yeah. I mean, this, you know, gets a little gooey, but, you know, I still enjoyed this.
I liked that the Venom suit, the symbiote, out on its own with no host. It's like a sort of a fun MC, like Marvel Comics Felicity. Let's see it. Let's see the suit just trying to make its way in the city.
Scott Speedman, you know, like that's. Yeah. What
I felt like it was more of a like a sort of traveling pants situation. You know what I mean with the suit.
I think that's the suit in general. Is the suit just changes sizes to whoever?
The symbiote.
Do you ever think that if Venom was like, "Whoa, sorry, you're 6'4"? I can't stretch that thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I need a shorter dude.
Or I just don't understand. If Venom suit doesn't have a human, why is it still the shape of a human? And then they answered that halfway through the book, where he's like, "Oh, I don't have to do this."
Yeah,
and then he was like, "Goop."
So I'm so used to it.
I'm gooping it up. Yeah. Do you think if Venom takes on like a super short host, he's like, oh my God, I got this extra goo. What do I do with all this extra goo?
I don't know. He's short kings all over the place, I guess. I don't know what that means, but short Venom out there.
How about the reveal that we get at Venom's priest?
That was something that I was like, somebody remembers this. Somebody reading this is like, I remember that from 1982 or whatever.
Yeah.
I know that's too far back.
But it's in the neighborhood.
Yeah, it's the real globulus of this book, I would say. Beneath the trees where nobody sees number six
the
from
blood
IDW.
Hunt continues.
No, nope, it's over. It's over.
Nope.
But
a different blood hunt.
Yes,
they're related.
By Patrick Horvath, this is the last issue of this title, and Sam, our serial killer bear, comes back to town to wreak terrible vengeance on the jerk mouse who framed her for a job. Mouse? Rat? I think it's a mouse. Anyway, it's bloody and it's harrowing. I hope there's more, because
fuzzy characters to die?
Because it's phenomenal. Like, what it's saying about the resilience of not just small town, but everybody to deal with tragedy and move on. I think that's ultimately what the point of this last issue is. I think it was very smartly and very well done. It grew beyond the initial premise of Dexter, but in Richard Scarry's world, and became something special and unique on its own.
But what I liked about the way this issue ended is it actually came back to show, like you're saying, that the town, the busy world of Richard Scarry type town, is what keeps everyone together in a way that is scary, but also like beautiful in its way. And
the heart is
super tight bananas. I mean that.
Yeah, yeah, that it really is. And I'm sorry for cutting you off there. But I agree. Yeah, the wanting of the town to go back to normal, this need to kind of like feel safe and all that. It was very kind of interesting. This comic really freaks me the fuck out. I felt like the story of this comic was like, you know, listen, there's like old school, you know, someone who murders and is very good at their craft. And then there's these young punks who think they can do it just because, you know. So I thought it was a very interesting kind of like that kid was really out of his depth very quick as soon as that bear showed up. I was like, this is so fucking scary. Even though it looks adorable, it's so freaky.
I got to say, there's been a lot of discussion online lately about if you're a woman and you're in the woods and you encountered either a bear or a man, which would you rather encounter? And most women answer a bear, and men have been very upset about that. But if it was Sam, I think they might go the other way. I think they wouldn't want to meet that bear, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
Ben's starting to look pretty good right now, I think, right?
Guys, I don't understand that statement.
Wait, are you planning? What are your weekend plans? Are you going to wander around the woods?
I mean,
the point of this is like embracing the horror, the status quo of horror that this book puts out there in a way, and it leaves us with that existential dread. But the safety of that, I guess. Like, I just love everything about this book top to bottom. I really hope Patrick makes one.
Batman, number 147 from DC Comics, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Jorge Jimenez and Miguel Mendoza. This is following Batman as he is on the run from Gotham City while Failsafe, with the brain of Batman of Zur-En-Arr, has taken over all crime fighting. The rails start to come off a little bit here as Damian finds out the truth about Failsafe. Failsafe really ramps up his plans. Vandal Savage is the new commissioner of Gotham City. And Amanda Waller gets in the mix too, starting to tee up where we saw her. If you read the Absolute Power special on Free Comic Book Day, there's a bit of a status quo that happens later than this issue. Plus, in the backup, we get a lot more about Batman's old teacher's plans for his various villains, starting with the Riddler. This continues to be very well done.
Yeah, this is really awesome. I mean, first off, really fun cover. Badass ending, you know, also gets a little emotional with Batman saying he needs his family. God damn it, Batman, just say that out loud a little bit more. Jesus Christ. But yeah, this is, you know, I'm glad Damian's finally waking up to the fact that it's a fucking evil robot and not actually Batman. So yeah, I'm very excited for how this is going to land.
Chip Zdarsky continues to sort of pull these tiny threads together to make a really enduring Batman story, I feel like. There's a great little section where Batman ends up in a old Justice League base, and you see him talking to Flash, and Flash is like, you know, to Barry Allen, he's like, you know, I can help you. And he's like sort of a dick about it, and then he's like, I do need help. It was one of the best illustrations. I feel like we've seen a lot of like Batman needs the Bat family over the years. Mm-hmm. Scott Snyder was pushing that theme a lot many years ago, and a lot of people have. But I really liked the use of the Justice League here in this moment, and Batman being like, hey, get out of here. I'm working on my smoke bombs, which is like a
well, and also big I really statement. Liked another spoiler for the issue, but I really liked Tim being the one to find him. That just felt right in that moment. And I loved him being the Batman, being the Robin that's going to step up and help Batman in this case. I thought that was
well. Cool. The Robin you need to beat a Failsafe is the most meticulous Robin, yes. Who is the most considered and considerate. I feel like it's their partnership is prime here, and I love the unabashed move toward that.
Yeah, Wolverine, number 49 from Marvel, written by Victor Laval and Benjamin Percy, art by Jeffrey Shaw. Sabretooth has been on some sort of blood hunt, I would say, but gets vaulted here a little bit. He has been thrown into, I don't think it was a death scene, but it was one of the scenes for Krakoa, and goes through a mindscape here, facing all the horrors he's done in his past. Meanwhile, Wolverine is in an adamantium armor and ready to take the fight to Sabretooth as well as his evil son, called Bad Seed, at the same time. We're one issue away from the end here, and some big stuff is going down. What did you guys think about this issue?
Alex, how was it that you had Cypher up here at the top of this issue and say, I am not Doug Ramsey? Did you have a classic case of Cypher blue balls, which I know you have almost constantly throughout the rest of the
season? No, this is great. I got a double dip of Cypher in this stack today. I am like completely sated.
Wow.
That's great.
I don't know. You said blue balls, man. What could I do? I have no choice here.
Yeah, and I guess I have regrets. the blue ball hunt begins.
Pete, what do you think about this? You're our Wolverine guy.
Yeah, you know, therapy is important. You know what I mean? I think
that really sounds like you didn't like this book, Pete.
Yeah, Pete's not into the Sabretooth War.
Yeah.
Wolverine, to get back to something new and exciting, like sitting at a bar and fighting a bunch of guys or something like that.
Don't talk down to me, you fucking piece of shit.
I'm talking down to Wolverine because he's so short.
He's a short king. Put some respect on it.
Let me say, I was surprised by this issue. I enjoyed it, but it feels like the Sabretooth War is maybe a redemptive Sabretooth story. This issue is aiming at that a little bit, I thought. But the eventual result
is he's like, hey, you were trying to redeem me, but you showed me all of these horrible things I've done. They really hyped me up to kill Wolverine.
Yeah.
So I don't know how we
would. But I think it'll click in the last issue where he's going to be like, oh, I get what the therapist was saying.
I guess we don't know, and we'll find out at the end of the next issue. We've got Wolverine in adamantium armor, sort of the outside bones.
He's done the inside bones for so long. You know what I mean? You got to try outside bones.
Mm-hmm. He also still has the inside bones, though, right?
Yeah, he's double boned.
Double boned.
So is Cypher in this stack.
Oh, boy.
I've liked this crossover. I like all of the characters we've had. The Quentin Quire stuff has been very fun. Like X-23 Wolverine out there hanging, ready to make a move, I assume, in the next issue.
Crocodile Black, number one from Boom Studios, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Sam. In this book, I'm hesitant to talk too much about the concept other than we start with some sort of grisly murder scene, and then we flip back in time to show a kid who is in the middle of the pandemic, seemingly having some sort of problems that we don't know about, and they become spiraling and worse over the course of this first issue until we start to loop back to that first scene in surprising and interesting ways. I thought in particular, you know, we always like Philip Kennedy Johnson here on the show. I was very impressed with Sam's art. It's very reminiscent of Pasquale Ferri, who we talked about earlier in the stack.
Yeah.
Just in terms of the dreamy, fluid lines that are going on here. I was very intrigued by this book, and I'm looking forward to reading more.
Just to jump in while you're talking about the art here. Yeah, I love the art. Love the tone that this sets up. It has this kind of like interesting mystery kind of world, and it's a whole mood for sure.
Yeah, this is the first book I read on the stack, and it was deeply unsettling in a really good way. Yeah. So definitely excited for more of this. It has the stress and horror of a good dark thriller. So looking forward to sort of seeing it. We don't know too much
yet. Can I ask you a question, Justin?
Yeah.
Do you think CR are at the beginning of the alphabet? Because you mentioned you read the books in alphabetical order, and that's not the first book.
The alphabet goes like this. C, X, P, V. Are. No, I read the Marvel titles in alphabetical order, and I read...
So you lied to us.
Huh. What, do you guys just like haphazardly jump from publisher to publisher? I go publisher, publisher, I go and...
No,
I
you gotta mix it up, dude. Trail mix of life, you know what I mean? Get a little bit of everything, dude. Don't eat all the M&Ms at once. Mix it up.
No, I definitely... Trail mix, I take it out and pulled them into discrete, separate baggies, and then I consume them.
Wow, that's a lot of work.
Yeah, that way you get to enjoy the raisins last.
Yeah, no, like Pete, I eat the raisins first and hate myself the entire time. Yeah. No wonder Pete's mad all the time. He reads his least, he's always doing his least favorite thing first.
Well, on the one hand, number four from Image Comics, written by Ram V, art by Lawrence Campbell. We got a big revelation in the last issue of The Six Fingers. If you didn't read that, kind of important to read it, getting it to here, because we knew these were two linked books, but this really picks up there in terms of the revelation that our main detective is very much tied to whatever is going on with these murders. We get much deeper into that, as well as the language of the blood prints that are on the wall in this issue. This is getting mysterious and stranger as it goes.
This is artistically impressive. I mean, the patterns, the really cool perspective stuff, the layers. This is really impressive what they're artistically pulling off in this kind of really cool story that's very intricate. I'm really impressed with this. I feel like this reached a whole new level with this issue. I'm loving the crap out of this.
Agree. Like this comic feels like it's about the nature of obsession. This issue particularly, it does a great job of visually presenting that. It's good. It's dark. It's a great unfolding mystery that I think, and also just Ram V, I feel like, it's just making big swings. The idea of getting some great industry cred with the other books, like the Many Deaths of Layla Starr. I feel like that has, he's like, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do this two comic series that everything reflects on each other. The book about cannibalism. Like, I feel like there, it's just a lot of great swings happening, and this is one of my faves.
Captain Marvel, number 8 from Marvel, written by Alyssa Wong, art by Rari Coleman. This is a huge action issue as various Captain Marvels and allies fight against the evil bird monsters that are trying to destroy them. There's some very fun moments that go down here. I'm really curious to see what happens next. But yeah, this is a huge bash-em-up issue with a pretty harrowing moment that happens right at the end.
Yeah. I mean, what sucks is, you know, I mean, that could be it, you know, so super sad. But up until then, I was having a great time.
Wow. Pete.
Can I throw out a theory based on this issue? I think we're going to get Rick Jones and Mar-Vell together again with the negative bands. And I almost wonder, I don't think we're going to get rid of Carol Danvers or anything.
Seems like it.
I almost wonder if the title is going to switch to focus on them in that dynamic for a little bit.
Interesting. I would like that. Definitely the Rick Jones is hanging around enough where it's like something has to happen here. Mm-hmm. And it definitely does feel that way. But my thoughts on it were more of a potential nemesis or like a problem. I think it's going to erupt from that rather than a change. Cause I don't know if we'll move off of Carol. I think the Carol Yuna stuff I've been really enjoying. So I would hate to completely lose that for the sake of that. But this is fun. I think I'm ready though for this to just move in a new direction out of this.
Well, it seems like that's what's got to happen after the last panel there.
Anyway, great book, Birds of Prey, number 9 from DC Comics, written by Kelly Thompson, art by Jonathan Case and Gavin Gregory. In this issue, the birds have been sent to a strange dimension. They're trying to find Barbara Gordon, who is marked for death. Really good art in this book, as usual. Very different from the stuff that we've seen in other issues. They get a lot out of a place that is mostly grays and blacks, which I think is hard to make that pop action-wise on a comic book page, but it's really well done.
First off, shouts to the way this comic begins. We get a locator that says somewhere with the sound effect plop and then groan, and the action begins. It's just like waking up every day.
That's how you wake up every day, with a plop and then a groan? Plop.
Wake up plop. With a plop, plop, fizz, fizz. Oh, what a relief it is.
Wow, or this broke out into a commercial. Fun covers, amazing art. I thought this was a really fun ish. I love this kind of crazy tripped out nightmare world. A lot of fighting giant bats, fun. This is just enjoyable read. And every time I'm kind of like reading this comic, I get sad when it ends, but I can't wait to see what's coming.
Love the way this comic doesn't, it's clear this is like a mystery that they're just like, we're not telling you what's up. You're going to have to really stick with it because the character's like, what's happening the whole time? And then we don't get any answers. We're like, what's happening? Don't get any answers. It is wild. I love the sort of separate scene with Grifter and all of that. Just having a little mini break there, I thought was really fun.
Let me ask you, when you're reading a comic and a character's like, what's happening? Do you feel like they're yelling at you to read faster? Because that's how it feels. It's like, I'm trying to get there, man. Like, give me a second.
You think the character wants you to read faster?
Yeah, because they're like, what's happening? And you're like, I'm trying to get there. You know, they're like, come on.
More and more, I feel like comics are a burden for you, Pete. Like something that you, like you're suffering through.
I do it for the people.
Wow. Okay. That was not a denial. Let's move on. Talk about The Last Mermaid, number 3 from Image Comics by Derek Kirk Kim. In the last issue, our poor axolotl Lottie was almost eaten by an enormous fish.
Oh, man.
And our mermaid was trying to save her. This issue, a big fight scene with that fish breaks out. We get a surprising new character shows up. Continues to be an absolutely gorgeous book. Very sparse on the storytelling and the dialogue, but keeps you completely engaged the entire time.
Yeah, I mean, you said it right there. I mean, this is just peak comic book art meets comics in such an amazing way.
Comic book art meets comics.
Yeah,
I've never seen that before.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm saying out loud, but my point is just this is just perfection. Okay, the action, the art, the lack of words. This is exactly what I'm talking about. I love this. I love the world that this art creates. The tone of it. It's so magical. It's hopeful. It's scary. It's all the things. I loved that she turned to go back for help at the end. You don't know if she, I love this so much. It makes me want to go back and start from Last Mermaid number 1 and reread till here.
Do you have time to go back to number 1 and then read 2 and then end up here where we're talking?
Hopefully, because I only got a month till the next issue comes out. So
that would take upward of 8 minutes.
Particularly with all of the characters yelling, hurry up at you all the time.
Oh, man. Luckily, there are so many words to slow me down.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, all those words slowing you down, stumbling, little stumbling blocks. I mean, of course she's going to turn back around. She's a mermaid in a spherical aquarium attached to a giant, sick-ass robot. She's got to go wreck shit. What else has she got to do? It's a desert out there.
Well, she could run for her life, you know.
Yeah, but I'm glad that
she
didn't.
Say
if you're a fan of the classic Luna Brothers work,
no, don't
this
you
is
bring,
a comic.
No, don't.
This comic is very Luna Brothers, mm-hmm. I feel
no,
like.
No, this isn't perverted as that is. So it's a different world.
There's time. There's time. It's only the third issue.
And by perverted, I feel like Luna Brothers just like featured nudity sometimes. Like that's not
which is
perverted
disgusting.
Idea.
Like the idea yeah. that humans have skin under their clothes. I'm sorry, I'm getting so
don't picture it makes it worse. If that makes it worse.
We all have
no,
skin.
You're,
we're
you're
all
right.
naked.
Justin, you're right. A perverted was too much. I just meant like
deviant.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. No, yeah,
the Luna Brothers.
No, I'm saying it's not as sexualized. You know what I mean? There isn't as much.
Again, kind of, it was just mostly nudity.
Yeah, there, actually, yeah. Honestly, it was way more violence, unsettling violence in those books mm-hmm. than sex of any kind. But I'm not even getting into all that. I'm just saying.
By the way, can I just mention somebody for anybody listening and curious to get into this book? This is a all ages book. Anybody can check this out. There
it's
is
so
no
good.
Nudity. I don't know what Pete's talking
glorious.
About. Glorious. Check it out.
I'm just saying,
he's
in tone
talking about
and
the
style.
Luna Brothers. We're talking about the fucking Luna Brothers.
In the type of storytelling, the art style is similar in that way and spare on the dialogue with a lot of action, sort of manga influenced, I would say.
Super tight bananas.
Captain America number 9 from Marvel, written by J. Michael Straczynski, art by Jesus Saiz. In this issue, as Captain America always does, he is teaming up with a cabaret made up of fairies and mutants to go find a penguin and a man made out of husks in the middle of the desert, fight an army, and then head back, except the penguin is actually a demon.
How many times have we read
that's
this?
That's what I'm saying. Like, yes. Something original, something different in comics. Just give me something that I never seen before. Rather than this tried and true story
that I
definitely understand what's going on every page by page.
Yeah, it's like now it's like if I don't see a penguin standing next to Captain America, I'm like, is that even Captain America?
That was my problem, is I read this because alphabetically this comes before the Avengers when I'm reading it. And when I saw C's Cap first. Without a penguin, yeah, C comes first before A. And he didn't have a penguin in there. And I was like, this is garbage. I don't like this.
Yep.
I understand that there's a lot of things that perhaps unsettled you, but me, penguin with Captain America, fine. Cabaret of fantastical creatures, I'm here for it. Right. Cap out there doing what he does, great. Mm-hmm. This part that I think is the true alarm bells going off.
Ooh, interesting.
Cap's talking to a character, and here's the line he says. Happy to help. So what's with the tattoo? Is that like Blink 182? What?
Also,
Captain America is into the post-pop, the post-punk stylings of Blink 182?
Also, are they rhyming on purpose? Because that was crazy.
None of this feels like a Captain America book anymore. I don't know what's going on here. I'm sorry. I have read a lot of wonderful things from J. Michael Straczynski. Jesus Saiz draws a fantastic penguin. It's really good. But like nothing. I don't understand how he got from arc where it's like, we're retconning the classic origin of Captain America and showing how he interacts with Nazis both in the past and the present day, to whatever this gobbledygook is.
So, Justin, I just want to... So your problem is, like, you don't think Blink 182 is America enough? You know, like, if he was going to get a band tag...
He would like Third Eye Blind. I agree with Justin.
The idea that Captain America goes back to his apartment and gets his Victrola out, what he has.
Sure.
And he throws on an
record
album
payers are
of
really
Anima of the State, and he's listening to that, to Blink 182. That's true insanity. And why does JMS know about Blink 182 while we're talking about it?
There's no age.
Cap
was
like
alien
to all the small things? Okay.
I don't know. Doesn't make sense to me. I'm sorry. Sorry to.
I mean, I will say, like, as much I'm not as down on it as you are, Alex. Like, this is like definitely some different stuff, but it reminded me of the fact that Captain America has gone through like a lot of wild iterations over his time. The Nomad stuff. He's definitely like, despite the fact that he is the Star Spangled, you know, Avenger, he's also someone who's often wandering in search of America and all of that. And this feels like maybe what JMS is trying to do here. Cap wandering.
How is this America? What is the benefit?
Well, it's like it's definitely not America, but the idea of Cap being like, I'm a wolf sometimes, a werewolf, is like, okay, sure.
I just don't know what this is saying about Cap. I do know what this is saying about J. Michael Straczynski, who co-created said Saint, being like, yeah, I'm into counterculture stuff sometimes, and I like wander through that. But the entire time, Captain America, kind of to the point you were getting at, Justin, but he's kind of like, all right, sure, just point me in a direction. Sounds good. So we're not getting anything about Steve Rogers. We're not pushing his character forward in any way.
I mean, I agree with you. He is very much like, he sees a penguin. He's like, I guess I'll put this penguin in my bag and give it water now.
It feels like reading somebody's dream. That's what this feels like.
Yes.
I think it's an interesting position to put Captain America at wandering the desert. And it's also important that, like, if you don't have water, you're going to start seeing imaginary penguins. So it's a weird place for Cap. But I don't know. It's the weirdness is what is, because I'm like flipping the page like a penguin. You know, and it's so weird, it's almost enjoyable.
Do you feel like it's a Billy Madison reference, Pete? Because, yeah, like, that's just as good as a Blink 182 fucking reference, as far as I
know. Oh, how dare you!
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Black, White, and Green, number one from IDW, written by Declan Shalvey, Dave Baker, and Jesse Lonergan, Gigi Dutrix, and Lorenzo Hall, and Polina Ganichau. Art by Declan Shalvey, Jesse Lonergan, Gigi Dutrix, and Polina Ganichau. This is your classic anthology in the three colors of the title, for the most part, about the Turtles, and we're getting four different stories, one about each of the Turtles throughout here. Take center stage. Pete, you're our turtle man. Talk about these turtle men.
Well, let me just get one more Billy Madison reference out of the way. Stop looking at me, Swan. Okay, so I just have a blast.
What character made you say that?
I just want to say thank you for doing that.
Thank you. Yeah, I just think that I'm too much of a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle head to not have a blast with something like this. I think it's just... I don't know if it's good. I'm like more turtle stories, please. Yes, and thank you. I eat this up. This is just glorious. We got a lot of different ideas here, a lot of fun stuff, great use of color and certain things. So, yeah, just enjoyed the crap out of it.
Did you feel like it was the right use of green, Pete?
Well, I mean, yeah, there was that one kind of oozy green turtle that was kind of, you know, just kind of a hydra, if you will. So, yeah, that was kind of crazy, but overall very enjoyable.
I mean, this was fun. It's interesting we're getting so much of these interstitial Turtles books in the last couple of weeks as we're getting to the next big twist. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are in a bit of a renaissance, right? It's like a prime time to be a turtle guy.
Yeah, which is appropriate given their names. That they're in a renaissance. Right.
Renaissance. Yeah.
Boy. This is a really good looking book. Great art.
Was it hard to say that reference, Alex? You sounded exhausted when you.
We've been
just to be doing
these
high level of comedy and understanding.
Exactly.
What's the word I'm looking for? Oh, yeah, comedy.
Wow. Pete, stepping away from the mic to drop bombs.
Poison Ivy, number 22 from DC Comics, written by G. Willow Wilson, art by Haining. In this issue, Ivy is fighting her kind of creator, Jason Woodrue, and this time it's to the death. Great designs throughout here.
Yes.
I missed Mercier Takara, but Haining's stuff is really good. There's battle armor that Ivy gets at one point here, which was stunning and primed for a DC Direct statue or whatever the company is called now. Great stuff.
I feel like I agree, this is great. I've loved this series from the jump. I feel like it's been such a fun surprise and has been consistently excellent. I think a lot of people are down on Solomon Grundy because he just says the same poem over and over again.
Who cares?
But I think it's great here. And a lot of you might say, like, oh, he's really limited in what he says, but I find that he's sort of more of a chatty Pokemon.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
You know, he says way more than them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he says more than Groot, too.
And you know another person who said the same poem all the time? Jesus.
Wait, are you talking about those made-up stories you were referring to earlier?
The myths.
The myths. Myths, yeah. They're called.
Yeah, insane cover. Really cool, like, giant evil monsters and stuff. This is just... some really amazing splash page, like last panel action. This is, I mean, artistically, it's badass and very enjoyable, the story. I've been loving this Poison Ivy renaissance G. Willow Wilson is doing.
You can't have all those renaissance, too many renaissances.
Yeah, I mean, I'm riding the high of the turtles, man.
I like the idea that Jesus is a Pokemon. I'm going to try to make this happen. And the whole Bible is being like, Jesus Christ.
There are three stages
Christ.
Of him, right? Like, same as
Pokemon. Gotta catch them all. Yeah.
This is, we've cracked it.
Yeah,
we've
Holy
really
Ghost
cracked
evolves
it
to Jesus, evolves it to God. That's how it works, I think. I'm understanding more and more about this religion as we go through the podcast. X-Men Forever, number 3 from Marvel, written by Kieran Gillen, art by Luca Maresca. So much is going on in this issue as there's a huge battle going on Krakoa. Cypher, the real Cypher, wakes up ends up in the middle of this battle. Is like, okay, get me caught up real quick. We find out why he was taken off the board by Krakoa. What happens next? At the same time, back in the White Hot Room, as we left off the last issue, Hope is trying to kill Jean Grey to reactivate her as the Phoenix in order to take down Enigma, who is the Dominion created by Mr. Sinister. But it turns out, in between all the, I think, badass moments that happened throughout this issue, which I absolutely loved, we are not so stealthily finally getting back to one of the biggest mysteries in X-Men history.
Kurt.
Who is Hope? Where does she come from? And who are her parents? And that's something I did not see coming, and I'm so excited about.
Agree. There is so much going on here, and we get a lot of sort of drama and emotionality out of the Destiny, Mystique, Nightcrawler stuff here, which I think is really good. Some great Sebastian Shaw underlying plans coming to fruition. But the Hope stuff I thought was so exciting. And there are two things. She's going to sort of sacrifice herself, ostensibly. I don't think that's what's going to happen, but she's hunting a phoenix, essentially, to bring it home. She says sword. She's stepping out onto her mission. She's like, she's given a sword from Exodus. Sword, you're alive, aren't you? Can't get a trick past you. I am alive. I'm Legion. I was like, oh. And she's like, oh, cool. And he's like, you don't like swords, do you? And she's like, no. And then he just becomes a gun. I was like, you have a gun that's Legion? What the fuck does that mean?
It's and crazy.
Great. There's no explanation.
Only in comics, man. Yeah. Just before that, though, I'll mention I love the moment where Hope is like, well, going off to die. And I wish Dad was here. And then Cable walks out of a portal and is like, tip of the hat. And she's like,
yeah, like they don't talk. Cable is just like, hey, I just want to say goodbye. He gives a little like wave, like a
but
sort
that's
of
so true to those characters. There's no reason that they'd be like, I love you. But having that little moment of Hope right before she disappears, whispering, I love you, Dad. Great stuff.
Got me. I agree. That beautiful.
You set it up like there's no reason for them to say I love you, but then you talked about a very important reason to say I love you. You know what I mean? So
well,
it's a
Cable's
little bit
not
weird.
Gonna do that. Cable's not gonna do that, but
he
Hope
should.
Is.
He should. You know what I mean?
It's a very I love you, I know moment, but without the romance, instead for a dad and a daughter.
It's a, exactly. He's infected with a techno-organic virus, not a techno-organic therapist, Pete.
Well, fuck all that shit. You know, if you have a child, you should love that to your child. So, you know what I mean? I shouldn't be telling you guys that.
Wow, controversial statement from Pete LePage. What a Pete's myths coming out. If you have a child, you should love a child. Well, let me ask you this, Pete. How'd you feel about the last line from...
Well, I haven't said shit yet. I'd
Pete
like to be able
to talk
about this
badass
comic.
Cypher moments at the beginning of the issue. Take it away, Pete.
Oh, my God. All right, so I enjoyed the Kirk and Two Moms stuff. I thought that was very enjoyable. And then the, I just thought it was badass to see Hope with that giant gun. And I thought there were some really cool splash pages. So I didn't get to enjoy the depths of that you guys were talking about, but I didn't hate this issue. So that was nice.
Progress. Pete loves the X-Men headline. I mean, just the exchange that happens between who we think is ostensibly Hope's mom. She says, I'm not pregnant. And Mr. Sinister says, you aren't yet. Let's talk about that. I was like, damn, dude. That's and it's in a bar. This is like Kieran Gillen throwing out the ultimate pickup line.
Nobody ever tried that monster in real life. Let's move on to talk about the Sacrificers, number 8 from Image Comics, written by Rick Remender, art by Max Fumura. In this issue, we're flipping over to our pigeon character who has been juiced up with literal god juice and heads back home to be like, hey, everybody, I'm alive. The whole sacrificer thing is a lie, and unfortunately finds out that things have gotten way worse while he's been gone. Pete, you were pretty hyped up about this issue. Why don't you kick it off?
Come on.
Oh,
come
was it you?
On.
Was
it you?
It was no, my no, I pick.
You I called it as my pick.
You both said
oh,
it.
You didn't pick it. I picked it.
I picked it.
Pete said it.
Yeah.
And then
I
you
said it first. First off, what a fucking issue. The ending, I jumped up out of my seat. I mean, spoilers, but you're going to be catching axes? You just straight catch it.
What would you do? I know you don't live in New York anymore, Pete, but if you saw a pigeon in Central Park or something catch an axe like that, what would you do?
I would do exactly what I did when I was reading the comic. I would yell, "Oh shit," and jump up out of my seat.
Wow.
You don't see that often, catching axes.
Well, you do, I mean? Actually. You haven't been here in a while.
Yeah, New York's left. Everyone's left. Catching axes.
Whatever.
The hottest thing to do is catch an axe.
You know how hard it is to catch a fucking axe? Clearly, you guys
don't.
Not
in New York. Not in New York.
Oh, my God.
We eat pizza and bagels and catch axes.
I caught like 3 axes today. Easy.
Jesus. I lost count.
Darn. Yeah. I'm worried because whenever I get excited about a Remender comic, he usually breaks my heart. But goddamn, this was a hell of an issue, and I'm so excited.
Yeah, this is the one where things will turn around.
Yeah.
Well, let me say, I think this issue is textbook. Like, character makes huge effort to come home. Home ruined. Everyone hates him. I was like, of course.
Yeah.
But then we do get a great turnaround here. But I do like – I think this comic is great. The art's beautiful.
So amazing.
Just another great story with resonance to our everyday lives that Remender just continues to crank out at an alarmingly satisfying rate.
Hey, Justin, would you say it was super tight bananas art?
I don't think I've ever said those words.
Oh. Okay.
But let me just say that I think
– Do you have your own issue, chart? Do you have your own
this
chart?
This issue confirms that the blood hunt – has begun.
And it certainly has over in Monsters Are My Business, number 2, yeah. From Dark Horse Comics, written by Cullen Bunn, art by Patrick Piazza Lunga. Pete, you were away when we talked about the first issue of this, which I expressly put in the stack because there was a killer koala with a chainsaw on the cover, and I was like, Pete's going to love this.
Yeah. This is Pete Bait.
It's Pete Bait. This is about a world that's been mostly taken over, but not completely taken over by monsters. Our main monster hunters have rescued a friendly monster and are trying to escape with that monster in this issue, only to run into more trouble. Pete, I do want to go to you just because I was really eagerly anticipating your reaction to the first issue. What do you think about this issue and this series so far?
Man, this is so much fun. It's cute and violent. What a fun combination. I think it's just great art, great action, fun over-the-top kind of premise. And the koala is my favorite. It's my new best friend.
I think the main character in this comic is Pete. He's a bearded...
Oh, the bearded guy, yeah.
The bearded curmudgeon who is like, I guess I'll go do this.
Yeah.
That's like Pete to a T. And confronts, goes through a thing and, slight spoiler, confronts a person who becomes a monster where she is sort of scorpion-ish.
Yeah.
And how'd you feel about this, Pete? Scorpion-ish, arms become tentacles. Mm-hmm. Sharp tooth mouths open where her breasts are.
Yeah, that's intense. But you know, when people transform into monsters, that happens a lot. You know what I mean?
Oh, okay. So it's okay when it happens in your koala book, but not with the Luna brothers. All right. I see where we stand.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. Great. I think we all learned something. I guess the nipple becomes a tongue, but we haven't seen that yet.
Yeah. We'll find out.
Yeah,
When we're older. Daredevil number 9 from Marvel, written by Saladin Ahmed, art by Juan Cabal. In this issue, Daredevils, which is Elektra and Matt, are taking the fight to Bullseye after the big reveal of Kingpin in the last issue, and that's the only characters we see, and that's all that happens.
No, come on, you assholes. Guess who comes crawling back to Foggy? With his goddamn devil tail between his legs, talking about like, oh, I'm a preacher now. Foggy ain't having it. Foggy ain't having it.
You are so hot on the mic.
What makes what about this? What do you like that Foggy hates him?
Yeah,
I don't know. What pleasure
like
are you taking?
That Foggy's finally standing up for himself and saying, hey, you know what? You can't keep doing this, me motherfucker. You know, you disappear, you come back. Are you my friend or you're not? What's up?
So you think, based on this issue, that Foggy's done? Foggy's going to finally stand up for himself and go
on
his own?
Yeah, it's awesome.
I think Foggy's going to come crawling back.
Oh, no. The crawling already happened, and Foggy wasn't the one doing it.
I did really like the
Foggy
panel.
Doesn't crawl.
There's a big full page splash when they finally encounter each other where they have a memory in the background that is a old school panel of them first opening up Nelson and Murdoch. And I thought that was very neat. That was
nice.
There was a good amount of emotional resonance there. Really like Juan Cabal's art through this issue, though I do miss Aaron Cooter. I think it's complimentary at the same time. Intrigued about what's going on with Bullseye and whether it connects at all with the Seven Deadly Sins thing that completely goes away this issue. That was surprising.
Well, and let me say, like, I feel like this run has been a little messy. Like, it felt like it was setting up a very clean Daredevil versus Sins thing. And then now we have Daredevils, the cover of this book is them about to kiss. We don't get any of that in here. Yeah, that could be a fun storyline. We're not touching that really here. Bullseye coming back. Bullseye, who I've talked about, I feel like is way overjuiced as a scary villain. In this issue, at least he isn't super powerful. But I want to also, at one point, Bullseye's giving like a men's rights speech to a crowd that Daredevil interrupts. The Kingpin was at, and Bullseye throws his microphone at Daredevil. And Daredevil's like, "Ugh, the microphone was weighted to be a weapon." I was like, "What? What do you mean?"
Wait, the microphone's just a microphone. I have a question about a panel in this book that I forgot about until right now. So during that fight, Bullseye is clearly trying to rile up the crowd to fight the two Daredevils.
Right.
And he's like, "Oh, you think you're just taking on me? There's thousands of us here in this auditorium." And it cuts to the auditorium and there's nobody in any of the seats.
Yeah,
because they started running for their lives once the fight broke out on the stage. Yeah.
So there's something about the blocking of that action that I just...
I thought it was kind of cool because it made sense of like, hey, that showed it packed, and then the kind of stage started to get berated, and so then it showed it empty, like everybody's falling out, which I think would happen if a giant fight like that broke out. But
that actually happened the other night at Hamilton.
Oh, boy. I would like to say, though, that I like the Daredevils back and forth. You know, Elektra being like, "Oh, if you're going back there, you got to do that solo because I'm not going to face the wrath of Foggy."
Well, and I agree with you. I like a lot of the status quo elements here. It just feels like this title is being pulled back to regular continuity for Daredevil so hard. Like, Daredevil's a priest. That's being shattered constantly. Daredevil's scared to talk to Foggy. He does. Like, I'm trying to, there's the sin thing that's ignored as we're slowly pulling back to it. Just Daredevil being Matt Murdock and a lawyer and all that. So like, I want to not have to go back to the normal status quo and have this be what's happening rather than the pull.
Agreed. Shazam, number 11 from DC Comics, written by Josie Campbell, art by Emanuela Lupacino. The Shazamily is dealing with a...
Nice.
Oh, my gosh. What is it? Adoption caseworker.
CPS, Child Protective Services.
Thank
is showing
you.
Up.
Yes, I completely blanked on the term there. Shows up and is interviewing them. At the same time, these Batmen, as I will call them, start attacking the house at the same time. And also, there's some weird stuff going on with Billy, where he and the Captain are now turning into separate personalities, leading to a big reveal at the end of this issue. This is great. I enjoyed what Mark Waid was doing on this title, but frankly, this feels like such a step above. This is what I wanted for this title from the beginning. I love the dynamic between Mary and Billy in particular, with Billy... Yeah. Being very shaky, Mary stepping up into the lead and being like, "Come on, we got to do this. Come on, let's go, let's go, let's go," is a great spot for her. And the comedy is just so strong across the board in this book.
I agree. And I agree with you also about the transition from Mark Waid to the Josie Campbell stuff here. Like, if it has more drive to it, I think. And this idea, this is a spoiler for this issue. The idea that Shazam, that the Captain has been hiding letters from Billy, that have a huge impact, potential impact and emotional resonance, I think is really cool. Like, that's a great split that I haven't seen explored in this character, that one personality would be trying to really influence the other.
Yeah, agreed with everything that you guys are saying. I feel like fun cover, fun twist ending. Yeah, just loved all the kind of family stuff. And I know they do it a lot in this book.
Shazamly stuff.
It's called the Shazamly.
As I was saying, I enjoy all the family stuff. And yeah, it just feels like a classic kind of Shazam comic in such a great way.
If someone refused to call us the Podcast Combine, which is what we call ourselves, would you be mad, Pete?
No, I would not. I would respect the how they want to talk.
Oh, I'd straight up globulous if that ever happened. Wow. Did I use that right?
I would straight up destroy you.
I'm sorry. That's clearly that. For someone
Destro.
Else.
Destro is a villain.
I'm not familiar. Yes. Oh. From what?
Yeah. You're being a real bear. You're being a real Baron Esoteric with your
references. Hey, look at you.
The Deviant, number five from Image Comics, which is what we call Justin for those fucked up Luda Brothers books that he reads. Written by Josh. Josh. Written by Josh. At the end.
Written by Josh.
Written by James Tynan IV. Art by Joshua Hickson. The big revelation of the last issue was that our seeming main character, a comic book writer who has been interviewing a potential serial killer, may in fact be the serial killer himself. We get a lot more information about that, or at least we think we get this a lot of more information about that this issue. This is a very disturbing, very upsetting issue. The turn has clearly happened with this title, and we're just all downhill from here. I love this position they put us in as readers, even as it's upsetting and uncomfortable.
Yeah, yes. No, this is creepy as shit. I don't want a day in the life of the creepiest serial killer. No, thank you.
It's a comic book writer, so that's actually arguably creepier.
Mm. Truth. This is a fantastic book. I like the way that this, the scary parts that Pete's describing are told in the smallest moments that just
too scary.
Accumulate and add up over the course of the issue is really fantastic, you know, fantastically done. And I can't wait to read the next.
Deadpool number two for Marvel, written by Cody Ziegler, art by Roger Antonio. Deadpool still bummed out about his breakup and is fighting some folks. He teams up with Taskmaster, goes to a convention in this issue. And meanwhile, his daughter is trying to figure out how to get in contact with him, discover some powers of her own. Pete, as our Deadpool guy, what'd you think here?
Yeah, just such a fun issue. Love this so much. I love Deadpool rolling with his giant rampage dog, or carnage dog, I guess is more accurate. Yeah, love the art, love the pace, love all the fun and hijinks. More, please. This is a great package.
You can't have Taskmaster and Crossbones in the same issue.
What are you talking about?
Too much.
Also, spoiler, asshole.
Too many outside bones.
Yeah, you can't have. Let's have inside bones only.
No, you can't say inside bones only. That's not very nice.
Well, this is another example of double bones, which we've said is too much earlier in the podcast.
No, we did not say it was too much. Sometimes you got to go double bone.
This is too many bones. I found that
Cypher loves that.
Cypher loves that double bone.
If you're not double bone, and you're not really living.
Do you know that sharks have two penises?
Really?
That's true.
Well, they're double boning claspers. Is called DP, and that stands for Deadpool. Justin, what did you think about this issue?
I stand by my too many bones thing. I think this is fun. It has reading the Joe Kelly Deadpool last week. This is that got me a little spoiled on the Deadpool flavor of that. This isn't quite as refined.
Well, Joe Kelly's one of the great Deadpool writers of all time.
There you go. Yeah. The Oddly Pedestrian Life of Christopher Chaos, number 9 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Tate Bromble, art by Isaac Goodhart. After the huge events of the first arc and a brief detour to talk about the revamped history of Frankenstein, we're back in it with our monster squad as they are about to deal with a new threat. If you haven't been reading this book, this is actually a great jumping on point, I would say.
Yes.
They recap very simply everything that's happened so far, which is an insane amount of stuff. It's fun. It's quirky. These characters are intriguing. And the fact that they all have this tight-knit clique now, this friendship, and are hanging out together really gives it a completely different new feel from everything we've read before in this book. Really enjoying this quite a bit.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is really a lot of fun. I love the end with the evil wolves and shit. You know, great art, nice tension building here. Also, the art style is so kind of like light but detailed in such a cool way. Yeah, really kind of sets a cool tone for this book overall. Every time this is in our stack, I get excited.
Agree. Enjoy this. We mentioned earlier on the Bloodline character in Marvel Comics, part of the Blood Hunt event, and we said that it was a little bit Buffy. This, if you are a true Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan, this book I feel like is definitely pick this up because it totally is right there.
Dead Weights, number 2 from Ahoy Comics, written by Tyrone Finch, art by Sebastian Perez. We talked about the first issue here, and I think we were pretty positive about it generally. It followed two hench people who get fired and what they do next. In this issue, they've been taken captive by a hero collective, I guess is the best way to put it, and potentially trained to be heroes, though there's a couple of twists and turns there. Given how we felt about the first issue, what did you guys think about the second one?
I like this. This title has an irreverent tone to it. It's something you don't really see characters dealing with this. They're bad at being villains, and they're bad at being heroes, and they're sort of not good at just talking to each other, our two main characters.
Yeah.
So it's not a relationship you see explored, two people who barely like each other trying to get by.
Huh. Yeah. Weird. No, but I think I love this. I thought it was very fun. The art was great. Kind of had like a slackers with powers sort of thing. I enjoyed the twists and turns, but good stuff overall.
Giant Size X-Men, number 1 from Marvel, written by Ann Nesenti, art by Lee Ferguson. We're getting a tale of Angel as he deals with all of his various iterations and ex-girlfriends and friends and enemies that turns out, spoiler here, to be a new, younger riff on Arcade called Maze, who is a potential villain that we might see forward in the Marvel Universe. I really like the focus here on Angel. This felt like a nice extension of what Ann Nesenti did on the Jean Grey series. I think there's a little tease that might be where she wants to take Maze next towards the end of the issue, take her against Jean Grey. But similarly to that series, how it really explored the whole history of the character, I think that did this here. Oh, I'm sorry. That was Louise Simonson who did the Jean Grey series. Yes. Totally ignore me. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Oh, cool, fun.
I haven't really seen the history of Angel laid out so meticulously, and we get that here, a character and a real examination, like, this part was bullshit. You should have been better here. I was like, oh, this is a sort of a harsh take on the character.
Yeah.
This paired with some news we got recently that Angel will be sort of leading the new X-Factor book. Mm-hmm. Right. I thought that
from
was in
Mark Russell and Bob Quinn, who did the Hawkeye story we really liked back in Bloodhunters.
That's when the Blood Hunt truly began. So that I'm looking forward to the X-Factor book, and I liked that perhaps this is setting up some of the issues that Angel will be dealing with there.
I agree and disagree. The only disagreement I have is I feel like this pairs a little bit better with like a Four Loko. You know what I mean? Where it's got a little craziness to it. This is a fun kind of collection of stories. Got old school kind of feel to it and different stuff. But great mix of art here. Reps really well.
Masterpiece, number 5 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Brian Michael Bendis, art by Alex Maleev. In this issue, the plans really started to come together. And then, of course, there's some twists and turns that throw Masterpiece for a loop. What'd you guys think of this?
Yeah, I was impressed with the kind of twists and turns, but by the end of it, I think that kind of last page with the names and the kind of roles and stuff like that really gets you excited for what's to come.
I feel like Bendis is doing a lot of different things in a lot of his work lately. We've had him on the podcast a couple times. It feels like he's sort of pushing on the borders of his world, wanting to do different stuff all the time. This book, though, feels like the maybe only example of classic Bendis moving forward. And if you're a fan, this is definitely a great pickup. It's a very smartly plotted, well-written from a dialogue point of view, slow-moving drive toward a seems like a great heist confrontation.
It's, if he was on the podcast, it's too bad we didn't talk to him about this.
We actually didn't talk to him about this.
Didn't. We didn't.
In your face, Pete.
Yeah.
Fantastic Four, number 20 from Marvel, written by Ryan North, art by Carlos Gomez. In this issue, the Thing and Human Torch are just trying to find a job and driving each other crazy in the process. Another, I don't know, like A-plus issue of Fantastic Four. Every issue of this book is pretty much done in one. So good. So much fun. This is just a classic Ben and Johnny riling each other up issue, but with a fun new riff on it. Great.
Classic Fantastic Four comic storytelling. You know, the plot doesn't make logical sense that Ben and John and Johnny would have to go work. Even the characters in there are like, wait, so you're just working at this grocery store making minimum wage? And like, yeah. Why not? And I was like, yeah, that is a strange thing for this family to do, no matter what their horrible circumstances are. But this is what Fantastic Four comics were and are. It's like, hey, oh, we're going back in time and you're going to be Blackbeard. We're doing all these different things because this book can just go anywhere. And Ryan North is a master at that. I think this is very fun.
Yeah, I agree. This is a blast, a fun cover. It feels like a real classic Fantastic Four comic.
Classic Fantastic.
Shout outs to the 420 reference. And yeah, I just think that it's clear that Ben is the best character. So that just really comes through in this issue.
Yeah, and I will say, I just looked it up really quickly because I had forgotten who it was, but it was Jeffrey Owens from The Cosby Show. There was this whole thing where he was spotted working at a grocery store and the tabloids started to make a huge deal about it. Like, oh my God, look how far he's fallen. And it started this discussion about, hey man, people work at grocery stores. That's a job and that's not a bad thing. And we need to stop looking at that as like, oh God, isn't that awful? Because it's a job. So that's definitely what Ryan North is riffing off of in this issue. And I think that was very smartly done.
And let me be honest, you do your time in Hollywood. I feel like there's almost nothing you want to do more than do a regular thing that is consistent and that you can do and feel like I have a life I understand.
Yeah.
So shouts to that.
100%. And if you'd like to support a life that we understand, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice. To subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
For Pete Smiths, Blue Balls, and Justin, I just have to say, the blood hunt has begun.
Blood hunt! The blood hunt!